Welcome to the Food and Farming podcast from AHDB, keeping levy payers informed and at the heart of the conversation.
Colostrum, liquid gold. For the best possible start in life, dairy calves need quality colostrum as their first feed. This early management can affect how the calf will perform health-wise, its time to first service and future milk production. A newborn calf's ability to absorb those vital colostrum antibodies through the intestinal wall decreases rapidly within the first 12 hours of life. Also, contamination during collection, transfer or feeding put the calf at risk by introducing harmful bacteria when it has no active immunity to fight infection. I'm Laura Audrey, one of the Knowledge Exchange Managers here at AHDB Dairy, and today I'm joined by Nottingham University vet Ginny Sherwin, and we will be looking into colostrum management practice on farm to ensure your dairy calves have the best possible start in life to become healthy, productive members of the herd. Hi Ginny, thank you for joining me today. Please could you start by telling me a little bit of background about yourself?
Hi Laura, thank you for having me today. My name's Ginny, I'm a qualified vet and I started my life off in private farm practice before then going back to university to undertake postgraduate training to become a veterinary specialist in cattle and to undertake my PhD. I've since stayed at Nottingham University as a lecturer, where I spend the majority of my time teaching final year students about herd health. And that's because my main interest lies in herd health, especially in young stock, and thinking about how we can optimise young stock performance on farm in terms of health and welfare, but also in an economical manner, as well as being sustainable for the future.
Ginny, colostrum management is never far from the conversation around calving time, but what are those three cues of colostrum management and how important are they?
I think the first thing to think about is why colostrum itself is so important. Historically, we've always thought about the importance of the immune globulin, IgG, so that's an antibody, which is really important for the calf to have circulating in its bloodstream as soon as possible, as the calf itself is unable to make any IgG until at least 36 hours of life, but actually we don't get up to decent levels until about 3 weeks of age. IgG is really important because it plays a role in the immune system, including binding pathogens and toxins, but even more importantly, activating lots of different immune pathways to orchestrate a solid immune response. And it's also the main antibody in colostrum, accounting for 85 to 95% of all the immune globulins. However, there are also so many other important factors in colostrum, including other antibodies such as IgA and IgM, which are fantastic at acting locally in the gut, and also immune cells such as macrophages and neutrophils. And their role in life is to essentially eat and kill bacteria and other pathogens. Colostrum is also incredibly high in fat, and therefore energy. And as we know, our little calves are not really born with any fat and very quickly lose all that brown fat. And there's lots of other extra goodies in there, as well as other maternal cells, growth hormones and things like that. The reason why it's so important that the calf receives good quality colostrum quickly is that unlike in humans, where we get the transfer of antibodies from our mums in utero, calves do not receive anything via the placenta from the dam. So the calf has not been pre-boosted, so to speak. The calf is also born with an immature and slowly responsive immune system, which is unable to respond to disease challenges like older calves and adults. That's because many of the immune system components, despite being present at birth, are not functional until the calf is 2 to 4 weeks of age. And after that, will also still continue to develop until puberty is about 9 months of age. When we're considering how best to implement a colostrum management protocol, we need to think about how receptive the calf is. And then with that, I mean how well that calf can absorb the IgG across the gut into the bloodstream. The permeability of the calf's gut changes over the first 24 hours of life, with the permeability of the small intestine decreasing over that 24 hours to being impermeable. This means if we need the all-important IgG to enter the bloodstream, we have a 24-hour window to get it in. Great, that doesn't sound too bad. However, that rate of efficiency of absorption drops in an exponential manner. So basically, the rate of efficiency is highest immediately post-birth. So at the first 2 hours of life, we're looking at the calf being able to absorb 15 mg per mil. But actually, by 12 hours, that's dropped to approximately 9, and by 20 hours to approximately 6 mg per mil. So it really is a race against time. And this is where the first cue comes in, quickly. We ideally want the colostrum to be ingested within the first 2 hours of life. Realistically, I'll happily take within the first 6 hours of life on farm, as we then still have a relatively high level of absorption, and it gives us an opportunity to add a second colostrum feed in within that 24-hour window. The other thing we know from the research is that if a calf doesn't receive adequate colostrum in the correct time frame, then they have an increased chance of suffering with mortality, diarrhea, and respiratory disease. When we're referring to an adequate colostrum amount, we're referring to the calf receiving a minimum of 150 grams of IgG in the first feed. This is where we need to know the quality of the colostrum, and therefore our second cue, which is basically how much IgG is in the colostrum which we're feeding. We highly recommend sampling each colostrum prior to feeding and checking that it has a concentration of at least 50 grams of IgG per litre. This is the equivalent of 22% on a Bricks refractometer, which means that the calf will end up with at least 10 grams per litre of IgG circulating in their bloodstream. And once we're happy with the quality of the colostrum, so we know that it has the 50 grams of IgG per litre of colostrum, we then need to work out the quantity, which is our final cue. We know that if our colostrum is at 22% Bricks, then we need to be feeding at least 3 litres of colostrum in the first feed. Ideally, we want to be feeding more, as this target of 150 grams of IgG is a minimum. A recent study from the States by Lombard et al. In 2020 suggested that actually we should be aiming for more like 25 grams per litre of IgG circulating in the calf's bloodstream, which is the equivalent when we do tests on farm of a total protein of more than 62 mg per deciliter or 9.4% Bricks on the serum samples taken from calves. So we need to think about how much colostrum as well as the quality that we're putting into our calves. We are aiming for at least 10% of body weight, which means that actually, especially for some of our larger calves, we're looking at 4 litres. I appreciate that some farmers are put off by the idea as this seems like such a large volume, but please be reassured there's been a study that shows that the capacity of the abomasum, which is the stomach where the colostrum will end up, is more like 4.7 litres, so there's plenty of room in there. So just to recap on the three cues, we're aiming for good quality colostrum, so 22% plus on Bricks refractometer, giving us a volume of at least 10% body weight, ideally looking at 4 litres, and for it to be given quickly within 2 hours where possible, but definitely within 6 hours of birth.
We've mentioned quality, quantity, and quickly, but do we need to challenge the model? Are there any extra cues we could be thinking about?
Most definitely. So more recently, we've moved to add a couple of extra cues, which include squeaky clean and quantification. So thinking about cleanliness, cleanliness is super important, with a recent study reporting that nearly 30% of 328 colostrum samples collected from 56 UK farms were classified as dirty. So what do we mean by dirty? Dirty here is classified as a high bacterial load. It's determined by culture in a lab, similar to when you send your mastitis samples off. There are a couple of reasons as to why being dirty is an issue. Ultimately, if we have a high bacterial load, especially if that bacteria is E. coli, which most likely reflects fecal contamination, we could easily be feeding our calves poo soup and thus increase the chance of diarrhoea. And when we say fecal contamination, we don't mean that you can necessarily see the faeces floating around in the colostrum. This is because 1 gram of faeces has more than 1 billion bacteria in it. So it doesn't take much to contaminate colostrum. The other aspect to consider when we're creating our colostrum poo soup is that bacteria like E. coli replicate rapidly. E. coli numbers double every 20 minutes at room temperature. So if there is a lag of 4 hours, say, between colostrum harvesting and feeding, and there were 100 CFU per mil of E. coli, so a low level of E. coli present in the colostrum on collection, there will be more than 50,000 CFU per mil present 4 hours later. The target when we're looking at the lab results is to have an E. coli count of less than 10,000 CFU per mil. So you can see how very quickly this can get out of control. The other aspect of having a high bacterial load, even if they're not pathogenic bacteria, so ones that cause disease, is that they can neutralise the antibodies and other immune cells in the colostrum prior to being given to the calves. So the naturally floating around colostral antibodies will already have been bound to a bacteria and thus can no longer be absorbed, so they're useless. And therefore, a high bacterial load is going to lower the quality of our colostrum that we're giving. The final cue that we were talking about was quantification. As with all other aspects of cow health, we need to know whether our colostrum management has been successful. This is similar to performing individual cow somatic cell counts for udder health, mobility scoring for lameness, We need to know if we have an issue. Is it getting better or worse? Is it at certain time points? Does it relate to certain management issues or changes? It's also really simple to do. All that is required are blood samples to be taken of calves aged between 2 to 7 days of age, as this is the optimal time, as it's enough time that we've had chance for absorption to occur, but it's also before the maternal antibody starts to significantly wane. The blood samples are then centrifuged or left to settle so that serum can be harvested, and then the serum is placed on the Brix refractometer and is used as a proxy to tell us the amount of IgG in the calf's serum. We're aiming for at least 8.4% Brix or 55 mg per deciliter on the refractometer to ensure we have passive transfer of that all-important 150 grams of IgG from the colostrum. The key thing as well is to move away from just performing this on a few animals. Everyone loves a sample of 8 to 12 animals. Well, if you have a herd of 300 cows, that isn't actually that many calves. So it's important to sample a larger number of calves and to also repeatedly perform this to check that colostrum management is consistently good. It's also a helpful motivator for staff if they know that their hard work giving the colostrum is paying off. We often write the results on the calf shed whiteboard or could WhatsApp it round the calf staff. And nobody ever wants to have a bad week. Also allows you to pinpoint what the problem might be. Is it related to heat stress, so the colostrum quality is dropped as a dry matter intakes drop? Is it related to suddenly having an influx of heifers calving in? The more data we have, the better equipped we are, especially if there is an issue with something like diarrhea, as we can quickly rule in or out colostrum management without having to work it out after the horse has already bolted.
What hygiene protocols can farmers put in place to ensure bacteria levels are minimised?
As vets, we love the words clean and disinfect, and yes, it's hugely important. Bobby Hyde at the University of Nottingham did a PhD looking into the factors which impacted whether a colostrum sample was likely to be clean or not on over 56 farms in the UK with more than 300 colostrum samples. His study found scalding hot water and not cold water had a significant impact when cleaning colostrum harvesting equipment as well as feeding equipment. And it also needs to be cleaned out after each feed with either hypochlorite or peracetic acid. Using parlour wash or just water reduce the chances of the colostrum equipment being clean enough and therefore increase that chance of having a dirty colostrum sample. The factor which had the largest impact on colostrum cleanliness, however, was the use of a pasteuriser to reduce that bacterial load. Whilst these machines are a significant investment for a farm, a single case of failure of passive transfer on a farm, so colostrum management gone wrong, has been reported to cost an approximate £50 per case, based on the increased risk of disease and death. So therefore, it can be a worthwhile investment on some farms, and anecdotally, it is often helpful with the logistics of general colostrum harvesting and management of delivering colostrum in a timely manner.
If quality isn't sufficient, what are some options farmers have?
The first thing I would say is ask why. Quality is usually related to either cleanliness, as we've discussed, or with how the dry cows are performing. Speaking to your vet or nutritionist around why the cows are struggling to produce colostrum quality we desire is important in the long term. The short term response is to find a substitute. This colostrum can be from a dam on the same farm, and this cow would need to be Yoni's low risk, so green on your Yoni's testing, and the colostrum would need to be of good quality, so 22% plus on the Brix. Colostrum can be stored, so you can keep it in a fridge at 4 degrees C for up to 48 hours, and please do check that your fridge is at 4 degrees, or you can freeze it in a freezer for up to a year. I'd always recommend retesting the quality after it had been thawed, and to make sure that the thawing process takes place at around 38 degrees. I appreciate that 11 o'clock at night, the temptation is to make the water hotter or microwave it so you can get to bed sooner, but you'll just destroy the antibodies, which is what you're after, as well as lots of other components in there. The other option involves the use of artificial colostrum. It's really important here that we're using a colostrum replacer and not a supplement, and that's because replacers have to contain 150 grams of IgG in the bag, where supplements do not have any legal requirements to contain any IgG. So the supplements are not going to be helpful here.
Final question, Jenny. What are some of the longer term benefits of good colostrum management?
Colostrum has been shown to have large impacts on the kind of calf's health itself, but also in the longer term. There have been studies which have shown that the volume of colostrum fed, so here they were feeding 2 litres or 4 litres, of colostrum has been correlated to the amount of milk given in the first two lactations. So this 2005 study reported an extra 1,027 litres in terms of 305-day yield for the first two lactations. So at 50 pence per litre, that's an extra £513 in yield just from giving an extra 2 litres of colostrum. So the question is, what is happening on day one of life that means that we can impact the performance of the cow more than 2 years later? It's been hypothesised that this is due to what is called epigenetics. Epigenetics is the ability for different genes to be switched on inside an animal, which alters how the genes go on to be expressed. The best way to explain this is to think about bees. So now bear with me. A little bee larvae lives in a hive and it eats honey whilst growing. And the sugar content of that honey is key to determining whether a bee becomes a worker bee or a queen bee. If the honey is high in sugar, then it means that there's an abundance of flowers around for nectar. So the high sugar content activates genes to ensure that the bee larvae becomes a queen bee, as this area can support multiple colonies. However, if there's a low sugar level in the honey, then the genes are switched on to ensure that the larvae becomes a worker bee, as there's a shortage of flowers, so there needs to be more worker bees around to go further afield to find nectar to support the colony and to keep that colony alive. We think it's likely that we can be doing similar with our calves. By feeding more colostrum and later on in life, we're undertaking early life programming, i.e. we're telling our calves that there's ample feed about, so we alter which genes are switched on, which then alters which metabolic pathways are expressed. These metabolic pathways are the ones that kind of tell the animal how to digest their food and how to utilise the products. So if there's lots of food, we're telling the calf it's okay to put lots of energy into growth and other outputs because there's plentiful of food around and not going to go short. However, if we're restrictively feeding the calves, for example, the 2 litres rather than the 4 litres of colostrum, we're telling the genes in the calf's body that, hey, food might be a bit short here, so switch on different genes, which activate more conservative metabolic pathways, and therefore we reserve the energy for staying alive and don't put so much into growing. For the colostrum, we're going to go back to the idea that there are more goodies in colostrum than just IgG. We have the other immune cells, antibodies, antimicrobial peptides, which we talked about being great for local gut immunity, but there are also many other factors such as growth hormones, such as IGF-1, epidermal growth factor, which play a role in these epigenetic factors. And they really do play a role. A study in 2020 showed that by feeding a percentage of the daily milk allowance as colostrum impacted the growth rates. After the first 2 days of colostrum feeding, calves were then put from day 2 to 14 into one of three groups. The first group were then fed just whole milk at 5 kilos a day. The second group were fed 4.65 kilograms of whole milk and 0.35 kilograms of colostrum per day. And the third group were fed 4.3 kilograms of whole milk and 0.7 kilograms of colostrum. So that third group were being fed 14% colostrum of their daily ration. From day 14 to 61, all of the calves were then fed 5 kilos of whole milk with a step-down weaning process. The group that received the 0.7 kilos of colostrum in that 2 to 14 day window went on to grow at 0.1 kilos per day more than those that were only fed the 5 kilos of whole milk. So we've impacted the daily live weight gain, and this was also due to the fact that it impacted their feed conversion efficiency. And this didn't only happen in the pre-weaning period, it also happened in the post-weaning period. Similar results were found when calves were fed transition milk. So there was a group that were fed 2 litres of transition milk and 4 litres of whole milk instead of 6 litres of whole milk for the first 21 days of life. It impacted their weight gain pre and post weaning, but also it decreased that duration of sickness from diarrhoea when the calves were ill. And it really is important because we've seen that that growth rate in the first 2 months of life accounts for 5% of variation of future production in animals. So for me, what we're doing, especially with the colostrum feeding, is we're programming and setting up our calves for life. So if we can get this right, hopefully we will reap the rewards later on in life.
Thank you, Jenny. If you're interested in learning more, please search Colostrum is Gold on the AHDB website. You can find the link in the show notes. I'm Laura Audrey. Thank you for listening.
If you have any comments about this podcast or have ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk.